it's time to go.
Well, it's very pleasant to have seen you all here.
Embrace it. There's only one you.
From 8 to 10 p.m., we'll focus on late-night programming in the early 70s through the early 90s.
10 to midnight will be hosted by many of the current late-night programmers of KBOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOOO
the Late Night Anniversary Program, December 31st, from 8 to midnight, can be found at kboo.fm. Midnight to 6, well, that's my time.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
...2018 is coming to a close, and we know that community radio is more important than ever.
You are the number one reason KBOO exists and can broadcast programming that is not driven by for-profit interests.
KBOO provides a platform for musicians, alternative perspectives, real news, and meaningful programming made by the people, for the people.
We set a big goal to raise $38,000 by the end of the year, and we are proud to announce that we are almost there.
We have just a little while left to finish strong and celebrate a successful 2018.
You know that your voice matters and that KBOO is the resource we need to gather, connect, and make the movement.
Donate today to make sure we meet the $38,000 goal. We are so close and we need you right now.
Go to kboo.fm/give to contribute now.
Support KBOO. Tune in.
And turn up.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, this is Lane Ponce, your fifth Monday Labor Radio host. And I have three guests with me this evening. We have Megan Cleland, who is here to speak about more work with Indivisible. Well, she'll be doing an update for us. And then I have two people that are working on a union action in Albany. One is an employee for ATI Metals, Dan Hoskins, and Nick Ghetto. How'd I do? That French name with the silent D on the end. And he's with the United Steel Workers, and he's helping organize their work group. So we'll start off with Megan. How about giving us an update on what your goals are for the new year?
Sure. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. Thanks for being here.
So we're actually, tomorrow is our third year anniversary. Yay. On the dot. And a little bit of background, Indivisible started in basically December of 2016 after the election in order to organize people, constituents around legislation that was being passed in Congress to kind of make sure that we protected progressive values. And over the last 2 years, we've basically been organizing people to go to their members of Congress, their offices, doing daily actions based on what legislation was coming through Congress. And recently we got involved in the midterm election, but now that we are entering into the 116th Congress, which is sworn in on January 3rd, we're looking more toward an offensive position rather than defensive, and our basic premise, kind of the tagline for this year is legislative work is election work. Because we had a lot of excitement around the midterms and trying to focus that so we can push our issues that we feel strongly about. And then that is basically going to be become the 2020 platform. Like fight for what you care about in the next year or so, and that's what people are going to run on in 2020.
Right. So what are some of the routine things you do every month, every week?
So we write daily calls to action based on whatever legislation is coming up in Congress at the federal level. And then we write scripts for each of our members of Congress. So we have seven. We have two senators and then five House reps. And then every Tuesday, we're working on the way that we're going to kind of organize those events. We have been meeting every Tuesday at a senator's office here in Portland. But all of that you can find on our Facebook page. Search Indivisible Oregon on Facebook or go to indivisibleor.org. And you can find out what's coming up. We're in a little bit of a transition period, so we're still meeting and working out exactly what this next year is going to look like. Some things are going to be changing. So
maybe the Trump Tuesdays are going to have a new profile?
Yeah. So I think we're trying to, we've never really had a situation over the last 2 or 3 years where the House reps had, you remember Congress always has power. And there's power in telling them what you care about. But because the Senate had so much, there was such a close kind of margin in the Senate, we kind of concentrated on that. And I think now that we've had 2.5, 3 years of organizing under our belt, we're starting to branch out and start looking at more members of Congress and diversifying.
So is this a paid position you have?
No, we are 100% volunteer. None of us are being paid. We started with like 12 people 3 years ago in a living room and have kind of snowballed. We have some amazing people that have given up a lot of hours to make sure that we're securing health care, that we're expanding voter rights, at least protecting them. That's what we've kind of been doing the last 3 years is protecting those rights and making sure that everyone kind of has a voice and that people are using their voice effectively. And I think now we're going to work on trying to expand those things.
Right. And I guess the other question I have for you, is this a local thing only or is it bigger?
So it is. It's a huge movement. There are about 6,000 groups nationwide. It started out as a Google Doc. But all of us are independent of each other. Each of the indivisible groups there's a lot of information given to us by the national team, but we're not a chapter. We're not like I guess we're an affiliation, but we're not like a franchise. It's not like we're a chapter of that particular thing. We take guidance when we need it, but it's all local to our reps. All the people are local. If we need help, there's an indivisible.org has a lot of resources that you can do. Basically, you just need a couple friends. Your voice and your vote has power, and it just kind of shows you how to leverage that.
Yep. It sounds like a very grassroots kind of movement.
100%. Yep.
Right.
We're not funded in any way. We're not incorporated in any way. It's basically like a website and a bunch of really, really amazing people using their skills to just make sure that we're helping our community.
A friend of mine writes one of those, what are they called?
Daily Actions.
Daily Action. Mm-hmm. So those things, you compile information. Tell me more about the Daily Actions.
So every day, depending on whatever is coming up in Congress, we don't cover everything, but we have a policy team that kind of looks at where our representatives, what committees they're on, what legislation is coming up, kind of where we have leverage, where our members of Congress can use their leverage. We have a bunch of people who spend a lot of time researching and learning about Congress and how it works and what's coming up. And then every day, Monday through Friday at least, we post an action on our Facebook page and our website, which gives you information, background about what it is, and then a script to call your member of Congress, one for your U.S. House rep, and for both of our senators. And you just call and leave a message if you need to. You can call every day. We ask that you comment on the website so you can kind of let people know what's happening, that you've made the call, what it was like. But that you can find those every day, Monday through Friday, almost without fail. People are working a lot of hours to do
so
that.
So I know. What I've seen happen is that the friend of mine that writes one, she gets information from researchers, mm-hmm. and they bring in a whole bunch of documented. They have everything footnoted.
Yep, everything is sourced. Mm-hmm.
And then she compiles it down to like 200 words.
It's insane. It is insane. Yeah.
So she takes what, maybe 6 pages of information and mm-hmm. compiles it into, so each one of the topics you've come up with like that?
Yeah. So every Friday, usually the policy team kind of gets together and decides what the issues have. It's not necessarily the most topical issue, but it's whatever we think that Congress can really do. So there's a lot of issues that we would love to take up, but because there's really no movement, there's no way for our members of Congress to move on it in government. We don't, not to say that we don't care about it, but it's just something where we feel like we have leverage and we can make a difference, and then kind of arm people in the state to use that information, because that's kind of the power, and that everyone has their own power by being a constituent, and now you have some knowledge to go in and back that up. And it really shocks members of Congress when you talk about, you know, withholding unanimous consent or PAYGO or any of those like government words that we have a really wonky team that learns about that. None of them had any experience with this really previously, but learned about it, put it down in a reasonable, digestible way so you can, when you call your member of Congress, you know, you feel comfortable doing that, and they know that you're paying attention, which is really what this is all about, paying attention. And if, you know, we saw that in the healthcare fight, especially with the midterms, are the conversation that we had around healthcare in the first 2 years since 2016 was kind of the platform that everyone ran, to the point where people were lying about their record because healthcare was such an important fight. That was only important because people made that important.
Right, finally.
Yes.
Finally.
Yeah, so before that, I don't know, it wasn't kind of part of the zeitgeist, if you will, of like people talking about things. And then the last 2 years, as people really got out there and told their stories and started to fight, then members of Congress were like, oh, this is an issue that people seem to care about. But they only know that because people were out there, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people were calling the representative and saying, I enjoy healthcare.
Informed
calls. People showing up at town halls.
Town halls.
That led the conversation in 2018, which is why we say that legislative work is election work. Go out and fight for what you care about, and that's what people will be talking about when they run for office.
Right. And I know that some people are hesitant to call their legislator.
Don't be.
Yeah, because you can call at midnight and leave a message.
Call them, and that's what I do. I call at midnight. I hate the phone. I'm a millennial. If I can like chat or text, much more comfortable with that. But really, we know that the most impactful thing is A, showing up at your rep's office. They work for you. You can make an appointment with them, go down, you know, tell them what you care about. Calling them is number two. If you're going to write to them, send a postcard, because otherwise it needs to go through the security stuff. But number one, that the volume of calls, you can do it at any point, and they work for you. Like, you're probably not going to get their policy lead on the phone, so you're talking to an intern. They're just basically taking a poll. So you call, say, I really want them to vote this way. I really don't want them to vote that way, whatever. And you can kind of take our daily actions and kind of whittle it down to what you're comfortable with. And they really don't, they're not going to argue with you.
They're just taking a tally.
They're taking a tally.
But our legislators mm-hmm. can use that tally when they go in and show.
You can guarantee that the people that are want them to vote the opposite way are also calling.
Right.
And something that we kind of forget, that even though we do have like a really strong progressive delegation, that they're getting calls from other people. And they take a stand on things when they really feel it from the community, but they only feel it from the community when we tell them. And so that's really kind of our whole overarching theme is, you have power, your voice has power, go tell your member of Congress they work for you, and you can really start to see things change.
Okay, so we're going to segue into you guys because you are organizers and you use the power of the individual to get your points across to the managers at the plants, right? And we're talking about the Allegheny Technologies Incorporated, ATI, in Albany specifically, right? And I think Dan Hoskins is working at unionizing your work group, right?
We are, and thank you for having us. We are. This is our sixth union drive since I've worked at this company. The first one we did it with the Machinist Union, which I think the closest representative for that is somewhere in Seattle. Steel workers have been with us for the last five union drives. Steel workers are local. We have two other locals in our city. Two other companies are owned by ATI. We are a third. We are the only one that does not have an organized labor force with the steel workers. So we are doing this union drive. I think we're actually going to win this union drive. It's looking very promising. It looks very good. I don't know, what more do we want to say about it at this point? Where would we want to go?
Well, we kicked off this union drive Black Friday. We dubbed it Black Friday Blitz.
After Thanksgiving?
Right after Thanksgiving. So we've been going for just over a month. Right away, we identified a pretty good core group of employees. The energy has been fantastic. We are having meetings on a very regular basis.
Let me ask you a question about the ones that failed. Mm-hmm. What do you think the main roadblock was in the previous attempts?
Well, whenever you start a union organizing drive in your company, right away, of course, the company usually does not want an organized labor force in their company, so they start to fight. And so the first tactic they use is to divide and conquer. So they'll kind of try to divide the labor force. They'll try to get people who are anti-union to stand, you know, wear t-shirts, to be boisterous, to say what they think. They'll have little meetings of their own and give them what they will say are facts about unions. And of course, they'll go find the worst case scenario they can, or some story of a horrible union outcome somewhere across the country, and tell these horror stories, trying to get that part of the labor force worked up and to get them upset. And when we come in, they'll start, you know, people will start saying things. Some will actually get really angry and get upset, and there'll be a little heat. Our job in organizing in a labor organizing attempt is to not only remain calm, but to just state the facts about the union. What kinds of things we're hoping to see when we do become an organized labor force, the kinds of benefits that we'll see because we are a union. So the company will kind of start that kind of tactic, and it starts to get very divided in the workplace. And that's kind of why the union drives have, you know, not succeeded so far, why there's been a lot of trouble because of a divided labor force. I think now people are starting to see, after six attempts, they've seen, you know, one of the things you see after a union drive is over, people will say, well, let's wait and see. Well, we've waited and we've seen, and for our union counterparts across town, they've done very well. Their benefits, their medical benefits, other benefits are very good, and ours have continued to decline, at, you know, really decline, and we've seen that. And it just, at this point, makes sense. At this point, we're calling this drive Stop the Bleeding. I mean, we literally have been picked apart, you know, from our benefit standpoint. So that's why we've had trouble, and that's you know,
from a union layperson. To clarify, you weren't unionized your company, and then does it take like a certain amount of people that need to get together and say, hey, we want to be a union?
It does. So the process that we're going through is called card check. And what card check is basically in the National Labor Relations Board determining whether we want to be a unionized labor force. What they're looking for is for some kind of majority in the labor force to say, yeah, we want to be union. So with card check, We actually hand out cards, which is quite a process itself. People can't sign cards on the clock, so they can only sign them at break or at lunch or whatever. So it's kind of a trick to get the cards to people when you're supposed to and get them to sign them when they can. It's actually kind of tough to do. And at the end, what we're looking for is 50 plus one. So if our labor force is 500 people, we're looking for 251 cards. Then we would turn that into the NLRB and
National
we go through the
Labor
Relations Board.
Thank you.
And they will determine whether or not it's a legitimate, you know, amount of cards. If somebody hasn't called for their card to be revoked, we've had this kind of thing happen before where we actually had the cards we needed. And some people asked for their cards back because the company launched a petition to contest cards. So we've had quite a battle for this.
Well, we did ask the manager if he would like to call in and have a comment with what's going on from his point of view, but he chose to not have no comment is what he said. No comment.
Well, this drive, the company has used the third party as a big stomping grounds in the past. They have said the union's going to come in, the union being a third party. We had a meeting last week where somebody said that they expected me to show up in a suit, and I was in a hoodie and a baseball cap.
He is now, too. Verification.
So,
for our listening audience.
So we ended up coming up with the new slogan. We have these hats made and stickers. The union is us. We are the union. Employees are wearing them all throughout the plant, and you're starting to see them in on cars throughout town. The big thing is we are not in a suit, and we're not coming from Pittsburgh to organize this plant.
The plant is based in Pittsburgh, is that right? Allegheny?
Allegheny's technology is based in Pittsburgh, and so is the United Steelworkers. But our locals, we have members that are volunteering, like myself, that are actually leading this group, kind of helping them organize themselves.
Highly paid, no doubt.
Yes.
Another volunteer position.
But so we're kind of teaching them what a union does, how to create an executive board, how to vote on motions, how to put motions together. And we're telling them, like, we're not selling you a product. We're here to help. Next week or next month, after you form your union, we're going to run into you at Costco or Fred Meyer's. We live here. So, I mean, during this campaign, we had a meeting, and I had seen one of the ladies that was an employee at Cass Products actually earlier that day at a wrestling tournament with my son. So, I mean, we're local, and we're just trying to help out, and I think it's going to drive this organizing effort home.
So now, the two that are organized, how many employees are in the two companies or the branches that are organized already? How many employees in those two branches?
Those numbers vary. ATI Wachang has about 500 union employees, and ATI Ormet has about 100 and a quarter. And those numbers have changed.
And then you're coming in with 500 more.
I believe that's the number. I don't have an accurate number of where we're at as far as size, but it's something like that, yeah.
So really, in a community the size of Albany, there is a local impact with members.
It's a large impact. So these jobs, all three of those plants pay very, very well. They're living wage jobs. So it's important to ensure that those are protected. And that's a big push for this organizing effort, is to guarantee that these employees have a career for years to come.
Do you guys have a deadline for this, for the drive? Does it need to have, like, by X date?
Right now we don't have a deadline. Mm-hmm. We are we're moving right along. The momentum is fantastic. We've had several large meetings, and we have a larger group coming into play next week. And at this point, I think that I couldn't ask for anything else. It's fantastic.
So, and again, it's going to be medical that's one of the big movers, just like it is in the communities and what Indivisible is working on. That's one of their prime interest areas, too.
Well, yeah, it's interesting to talk to people. I came from a working poor background. And I think a lot of people don't realize that at any point an employer can just say, no, we can't afford your health care. or know, like a full-time worker, especially with a wage earner, like an hourly worker, just because you work full-time does not mean you're actually full-time. So you could work 40 hours a week, and until they like categorize you in their system as a full-time worker, you don't get benefits. And they can take those away at any point. And so I think that for me, growing up in like a working class town, unions were a huge deal. And I remember, I think we were talking before we were on the air about the kind of propaganda around unions that I saw as an hourly worker in a company that I will not name. And when I would tell people, because of course I was like shocked, to me unions were always something that was like a protection. And there were a lot of, there was a lot of this negative propaganda. And I was talking to coworkers. I had to kind of dispel a lot of the things that they were saying, like, oh, I didn't realize that this is what they actually were.
And that must be what you're spending a lot of time doing,
yeah,
both of you.
Every single union drive that happens, we have to dispel, first of all, the first thing that people will be told, and it, I don't know why it's the first thing, but they're told that the union reps are going to come in and they're going to be sneaky, shady salesman type people. You know, they'll come in a Cadillac with dark windows and greasy hair and three-piece suits, and they're kind of mobsterish or whatever. And you go down to a union hall. I was, the first time that I went to the union hall to have a union meeting and saw the presidents from the locals and saw these were guys like me. These are just good guys, good people that really are trying to make a better life for their family. And that's what it's about. You know, in any of these large companies, you know, they have basically, if you get down to basics, there's basically three interests. There's the interest for the company itself, and of course, all of their corporate level people. There's the interest for their investors, and the interest for the employees, which usually takes the last seat. And if there's any questions about profitability and where we're going to save money, the question always lands on the employees. What the union does is comes as we become an organized labor force is that the union gives strength to the employees, so they are no longer the last consideration or the first consideration when it comes time to save money.
Right, because you have a contract.
Because we have a contract.
A legal contract.
A legal contract, and we can fight for the things that we have earned, that we're not out there just taking this. We're not out asking for things for free. So yeah, as we're doing this labor drive, we're looking for strength for our employees and our company. There are going to be the lies. They are going to say things about the union that aren't true. They are going to, I mean, if I went to a list of everything that they've said, and then we have to, you know, go after each one and show the examples of why what they're saying either isn't true or it's been misconstrued or just twisted. Yeah, usually it's a twisted. Almost every lie has some truth, right? And that's what they'll do. So yeah, we've been working hard. Nick is an amazing organizer. And I mean, just watching him and learning from what he's doing is helping me understand better. I look back at some of the past drives and I think, oh man, you know? And a lot of the organizing that he's doing, you know, instead of it being a sneaky, shady salesman, what he's doing is reaching out to the people that never did have anybody reach out to him.
Yeah.
And right. That's where he's succeeded a lot.
And that's Nick Gatto, who is here with us. We're speaking of you in third person, right?
I love it.
But he's here with us. So where do you wish for him to go as an organizer or an employee?
I see Dan actually taking a leadership role as soon as we kick off this union force. So we've identified a good group of people that I see will be running that local successfully, and I look very forward to working with them in the future.
You kind of represent a couple already unionized groups, so those people in Albany are supportive of your efforts, right?
Absolutely. So we have a shared union hall. Which we are all using now, and we plan on inviting them into our family. And as we move forward, we can make some amazing things happen. We like to do a lot of community support in Albany and kind of show the people that live there, all the community members, that the union's not this big, bad, overpaid person at a company, but we are the community.
Okay, you know, we're about ready to wrap up, but I'm really pleased that you guys came over from Albany, because I think the work you're doing in Albany, there's people here in Portland that are trying to organize Burgervilles and other Burgerville and other things. So it's good for the information to get out of different work groups that are working for the same kind of thing. And Megan, always a format for you here on the fifth Monday.
Taking over.
Yes.
Every Monday. No.
She's almost like a coworker. What would you like to say?
If you guys want to follow our drive, we do have a Facebook page. Look up USW Cast Products Employees. We update that very many times a day.
Okay. And you also have information on the website.
IndivisibleOR.org or Facebook, Indivisible Oregon. And also we have a very snarky Twitter feed at Indivisible_OR.
Okay. So I think we're finishing up things and we'll wrap it up. Thank you all for being here. It's very important work you all do.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio. To you, the 9-to-5er.
KABU Community Radio is requesting proposals for a grant writer to provide ongoing grant writing services and application support. This is a one-year contract position for 200 hours, compensated at $25 an hour. Proposals must be submitted electronically to Delphine Crescenzo, station manager at Dell, that's D-E-L, at KABU.FM. Proposals are due Friday, January 4th at 5 p.m. Responsibilities, background information, the scope of work, and proposal requirements can be found at kabu.fm/grantwriter2018. KABU Community Radio is requesting proposals.
That's right, KABU is. And you are listening to KABU right now. It is 6:31 and time for Prison Pipeline.